Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services, a Democrat, is not happy with the state's Republican governor.
Republicans will support Governor Ron DeSantis' power grab.
Also tonight, some folks have been upset about the spread of electronic scooters. Will they be ready for a possible explosion of electronic bicycles in Florida?
This bill effectively turns our non-motorized shared-use paths into motorized ones.
We'll also get a veteran Capitol Press Corps member's take on the legislative session thus far and follow the progress of a bill that would outlaw the declawing of pet cats in Florida. It's the end of the fourth week in the 2020 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Florida Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Freed is the only statewide elected Democrat, and she claims Republicans have it out for her. Freed is battling proposals that cut her department's budget and take away the Office of Energy, something she's calling a power grab. Republican lawmakers, meanwhile, are brushing off her complaints, and Ryan Daly brings us this report.
I don't need to be at today's committee meeting. I know exactly what's going to be happening later today behind these doors. Republicans will support Governor Ron DeSantis' power grab.
The Republican-led Florida House is moving ahead with trying to move the state's Office of Energy from Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Freed's agency to the Department of Environmental Protection, housed under the governor's authority. The Office of Energy has been under the Department of Agriculture for the past 9 years. Its function is to evaluate energy-related studies and stakeholder input in order to recommend policies and programs to the governor and lawmakers. In terms of staffing and funding, Republicans propose moving exactly what's in place under the Department of Agriculture over to DEP,
which transfers 14 full-time equivalent positions, $539,080 in general revenue funds, and $1,214,900 in trust fund authority.
Republican Representative Holly Rauschein chairs the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee, which is behind the committee bill. Her rationale for moving the office seems to be DEP is just a better fit.
We talk about clean water, we talk about clean air, we talk about clean energy. So it's a very acceptable place to put the Office of Energy.
Freed isn't buying it and is calling out what she sees as partisan punishment. The agriculture commissioner is questioning the timing of the move, suggesting that's all the evidence needed to chalk it up as politically pugnacious.
When was the last time a sitting cabinet member, an elected constitutional officer of this state, had an important part of the department removed? Could not think of another instance in decades.
But Rauschein says the answer to the timing question is simple.
Quite frankly, the election of Governor Ron DeSantis happened. He's really taken a lead on all things related to climate change and has consistently shown that the environment is one of his priorities. This would be a perfect time to transfer the state energy office to under his leadership to DEP.
Then there's the stickers. Those who have filled an automobile with gas in roughly the past year may have noticed Freed's face smiling back from the pump. House Republican lawmakers have certainly taken note.
I do think we've always got to be careful in our respective positions to serve the public with humility and just make sure that we're not going overboard in that regard.
House Appropriations Chair Travis Cummings and his fellow Republicans see the stickers as self-promoting for political purposes and passed a measure last session allowing only for text to be displayed on such stickers. The chamber is threatening to freeze nearly $20 million in funding to Freed's agency until the stickers are replaced. The Agriculture Commissioner is speaking out about it.
Republicans will also vote to hold Consumer Services budget hostage, threatening ability to protect consumers because they are upset about some stickers.
Freed says the process of replacing stickers is already underway.
We have already been replacing these stickers. Stickers worked. They raised awareness. but we redesigned them with feedback from disabled veterans.
The commissioner says the redesign was in the interest of increasing legibility, and she says Republicans' threat of withholding funds is being done in bad faith.
Republicans are threatened, had near complete power for almost two decades. Now a Democratic woman gets elected statewide, and the old boys club cannot stand for it.
Meanwhile, the feud between Freed and House Republicans hasn't seemed to reach the Senate. Asked for his thoughts on the potential Office of Energy move and gas pump fracas, Senate Appropriations Chair Rob Bradley seemed cavalier. He had this to say about the Energy Office.
No one has ever approached me and said to do it. As I said before, I'm not even sure there's a Senate bill on that issue, and I would not consider that a priority of the Senate's.
Bradley took a similar tone in answering questions about the gas pump stickers, but pressed by reporters on what he thinks of the withholding of funds, Bradley had this to say.
Like I said, I'm not a big fan of the stickers in their present form, but my goodness, if the biggest thing we're dealing with is stickers, then there's not much going on. The fact of the matter is there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things that are very important, and that's not something that would rise to the level as of a incredibly important issue for the people of the state of Florida, but we'll see how it goes.
If it were to get pushed through, the House bill to move the Office of Energy would take effect in July. I'm Ryan Daly.
Electronic or e-bikes going up to 28 miles an hour could soon be allowed on sidewalks, bike paths, and other places throughout the Sunshine State. Robbie Gaffney reports that top speed is 8 miles an hour faster than what's currently allowed.
E-bikes can go anywhere a normal bike can go. That includes roads, sidewalks, bike paths, and more. But state law limits their speed to 20 miles per hour. A proposal by St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandes would bump that up to 28 miles per hour. The plan is causing concern for Harry Vandenberg from Floral City. He spoke at a Senate committee meeting to discuss Brandes' measure.
This bill effectively turns our non-motorized shared-use paths into motorized ones.
Vandenberg says paths for pedestrians and bikes are not designed for higher-speed e-bikes. He's asking lawmakers to only allow e-bikes on roads, bike lanes, and shoulders.
I request the legislature forbid them from being operated under motor power on any paths designed to be shared by pedestrians and human-powered bicycles.
Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee says counties should be able to decide what's best for their communities.
It's the locals on the ground that are in the best position to determine whether or not this maximum speed we're setting and some of these other options that we're giving electric bikes are actually appropriate for their community.
Brandes says local governments can choose to ban the higher speed e-bikes if they want to.
We've given local governments and frankly the state the ability to review these types of options and determine what's appropriate.
In Tallahassee, e-bikes from the city's pilot program can only go up to 15 miles per hour. About 50 of them will be released on the streets. Currently, people younger than 16 are banned from riding e-bikes, but Brandes' measure would allow anyone to ride them, including children. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a veteran Tallahassee watcher gives his take on what's happening as we near the midpoint of this legislative session.
While they are not going to give DeSantis exactly what he wanted, I think that they are going to give him something so that he will be able to say, look, I got this.
Lawmakers are looking into whether using E-Verify makes sense for the state.
You know, we're a nation that only exists because we respect the rule of law, and sometimes the rule of law is inconvenient.
And Florida cats may be safe from painful declawing surgery if a measure that passed a Senate committee this week makes it through the lawmaking process.
But we know, as was pointed out in testimony today, that this is and can be life-threatening to cats.
On Capitol Report, we welcome a longtime Capitol reporter from Politico, Gary Fineout. Gary, good to see you. We are just around the halfway point of session. And is it my imagination or is there a certain lack of sense of urgency at this point right now?
I joked with someone over the last couple of weeks. It's like at the very beginning of session, you ask the leaders about a particular issue, and they'll say, "Well, it's early. And then before you know it, you ask about it again, and like, well, I think it's too late to handle that this session. And so we always seem to have this like sort of very intriguing pacing issue. But it's like that nearly every year. We have this sort of like sort of slow pace at the beginning and take a couple of things up. And then it's just sort of like, whoa, Nelly, at the end. It's like, oh, my gosh, there's all this stuff that has to be done, and we're dealing with this bill and we're dealing with that bill. Now, that said, I get the distinct impression. I mean, every session has its own rhythms, but this one is really – it could be a combination of factors. It could be because it's an election year or things of that nature. But you can just tell that there really has not been a sense of urgency so far. And I just don't know how much is going to get done. I mean, I think the main thing is I think they're going to get the budget done. I think there's all signals that they will figure out that over the next four and a half weeks. And then I think it looks fairly evident that the bill dealing with parental consent is going to pass, and that's going to go to the governor. And then but we're waiting to see some of these other issues. A lot of special interest fights, whether it's doctors versus nurse practitioners, whether it's insurance companies versus trial lawyers, that's consuming a lot of time and energy right now. We are going to have probably some sort of action next week on E-Verify, which is a big issue that, you know, the governor backed that bill, and there are Republicans who want to see that bill, but it has split the Republicans in the legislature. So, but again, it's not like we've got a million things going on in session.
Few people at the Capitol have ever been able to dissect budgetary numbers as well as you can. You must have, you know, a spreadsheet instead of a cerebral cortex here, but we already have opposing visions of the state budget out now for House and Senate here at the midpoint of session here. Do we have irreconcilable differences? Are these guys closer than it for at
no,
first peers?
There are a few trapdoors. There are a few things going on that could always lead to sort of a bit of a derailment at the end. But I just don't see anything that is ultimately going to cause it all to fall apart. Now, clearly, there's a bit of a difference on teacher pay, but I think you know how these things are. The fact that they both got money in their budgets, and even if the amounts don't match up and they don't have exactly the same approach, you just get the feeling that it's going to be – they'll work that out. And I think they all know that they need to come out of here with something, because the governor, he has made this a priority. And while they are not going to give DeSantis exactly what he wanted, I think that they are going to give him something so that he will be able to say, look, I got this. I think on some of the other issues, there's probably going to be some give and take on I know a very important issue in this area, employee salaries. But the fact that it's even on the table on one side and then you've got sort of targeted raises on the other side leads me to feel they'll probably come up with something on that. So there are a few hiccups left to come. I'm not saying that there's not. One of them that I would keep an eye out is on school funding, not so much teacher pay, but this term that I know that only people in the weeds kind of know about, this thing called district cost differential, which, basically the House wants to retool that. The reason that's important is because it's a sort of a formula that's used to adjust the funding based upon certain it's meant to sort of even out the funding based upon where you live in Florida. And whenever they've dealt with this in the past, it can get a bit rocky. So but maybe the Senate feels that proposal that the House has come up with is not something that they're overly – I mean, the House has tried to structure it in such a way that it doesn't cause wide disparity between the counties. But it's still something I'm going to keep an eye on.
Governor Ron DeSantis' immediate predecessor, Rick Scott, was not renowned for really getting into the weeds with the legislative folks beyond the leadership where he could exert some control. Is Governor Ron DeSantis even a little bit more hands-off than perhaps Governor Scott was? You don't see him doing an awful lot of things around the Capitol that he perhaps could be doing.
Well, I don't think you see him doing a sort of having to do the public pressure that Rick Scott did. But let's kind of diagnose that a little bit. First off, DeSantis has had a pretty good relationship with the legislative leadership since he came into office. I don't think there's been a need to have that sort of dynamic in place where he's got to like sort of publicly flail the legislature, which remember, Rex Scott, he even started running ads where he was going after some of the lawmakers on his own party. So there's been no need for that. Now, and I think there's other important things to remember. I think his lieutenant governor, Jeanette Nunez, is very much engaged. And she has very good relationships with a lot of people in the legislature. He's got a team that's engaged. And so, I mean, and you've seen him doing things like he's been here the last couple of weeks and he's been having one-on-one meetings with legislators. So, yeah, so he's not like sort of getting in front of the world and saying, you know, other than, you know, his State of the State speech, he's not been saying, well, the legislature better do this. I mean, he's not been forced to do that. Now, that said, He's not having the, you know, 1,000 batting average that he had last year. I mean, there are some things that he's getting a little bit of pushback on. Everything from we don't know where things are going to land on Visit Florida. We've obviously seen changes in teacher pay. One of his appointments to the South Florida Water Management District got into it with some senators this past week. So there are little flashpoints. Things are not, you know, totally perfect. But I think that it's not the way it was.
And speaking of flashpoints, does Florida Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services Nikki Fried get to keep her mug on every gas pump in Florida? Or is that a lost cause along with an agency that she may lose?
I mean, that's very interesting, that whole dynamic. I mean, the fact of the matter is you are dealing with the lone statewide Democrat. And the question is, do some of the Republicans in the legislature feel that she poses a threat? And let's just say what that threat is. The threat is, could they view her as a potential candidate in 2022 running against an incumbent governor? I'm not saying we're anywhere near that yet. But what I'm suggesting is that clearly there is a thought process about the way Fried has been doing some things. And let's put some onus on Fried too, because she has become more and more partisan. I mean, she was always a Democrat. I'm not saying she wasn't, but you know, you felt like after last year's session, she sort of ramped it up a bit. I mean, she appeared at some Democratic state events. She started having a very loud voice about expressing her dissatisfaction with President Trump. So, and she's complained about the legislature and some of the things that they've done. So, you know, it's not like she's like done nothing and not been getting in the fray herself. But the point is that DeSantis has some bills that he wants to do where he wants to assume more power under his leadership. And then you have the whole sticker issue, which, I mean, it's important to note that the budgetary issue that the House has imposed on the stickers, the Senate has not yet gone along with. So, again, it could be an issue of bargaining at the nth hour when we get close to the end and they need to close it out.
And as you said at the outset, still a ways to go before the end. So we have plenty of time for a lot of this stuff to kind of fuminate and percolate before it comes to the final conclusion. Gary Fineout from Politico Florida, thanks so much for being part of it, Gary.
No problem.
Florida lawmakers are poised to take up a measure next week that would expand the use of E-Verify, a system that checks whether new workers have the immigration status required to legally work in the United States. But some worry about the proposal's impact on the economy. Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers say they'll likely be spending the weekend trying to find a balance before the measure is presented next week.
We are a state that has an economy not the other way around. And we need to make sure that our Florida citizens from all walks of life come first.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis made E-Verify a priority during his State of the State address at the start of the legislative session this year.
Our low-income workers also shouldn't have their wages depressed by cheap foreign labor. Assuring a legal workforce through E-Verify will be good for the rule of law, it will protect taxpayers, and will place an upward pressure on the wages of Floridians who work in blue-collar jobs.
Leaders in the House and Senate have raised concerns about how the measure would impact the state's economy. Senate President Bill Galvano spoke recently with reporters about the issue.
At the heart of my caution is the additional burden on private entities. I've not read the bill, but I understand that it's more of a move to try to limit to government entities and things of that nature. It may be something that could help us find a middle ground. I'm not prepared to say that yet, but we'll look at it.
We have a lot of folks working in this economy that probably are not documented properly and could not pass an E-Verify system. We don't want to disrupt the economy, but we also don't want to ignore that is taking place in our state and allow that problem to magnify over time.
Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee is working to find a compromise. He's sponsoring a bill that would require employers to use the E-Verify system before making new hires.
So the question is, you know, what can we come up with that will help us ensure that the jobs are going to legal Americans first, that there's not wage suppression going on in society here in Florida, and that at the same time we're not putting too big a burden on industry to disrupt the economy or to make, you know, very, very small businesses jump through hoops that they don't have the sophistication to jump through.
Lee says the issue isn't party specific.
But, you know, it's been kind of a chuckle to file this bill and have, you know, people showing up in my office in a MAGA hat, you know, a Trump hat, you know, telling me how we can't do this because they're not going to be able to continue to hire illegal immigrants. And it's like, seriously?
But Lee says the legislature can't make all its decisions based on what's best for business.
I've said facetiously before, you know, you could legalize prostitution in this state and create jobs, but some things just aren't our value system. And so we're a nation that only exists because we respect the rule of law, and sometimes the rule of law is inconvenient.
Under the measure, the E-Verify requirement would only apply to new hires. People already working wouldn't lose their jobs. Lee hopes the move will reduce what he calls the magnet drawing immigrants to Florida, since those without proper work permits would not be able to get a paycheck. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Looking ahead to next week's expected activity at the Florida Capitol, here's Gina Jordan.
Here's a look at what's coming up in the Florida legislature. An immigration bill gets a committee hearing in the Senate next week. The proposal would require private and public employers to use the federal government's E-Verify system to check on the legal eligibility of new workers. Two other proposals would exempt private employers from the E-Verify mandate. The Senate President and House Speaker have said they have concerns about an E-Verify mandate because it could be a burden for businesses. People with specified disabilities may soon be able to have the capital letter D placed on their driver's license under certain circumstances. School districts may be prohibited from using seclusion and certain restraint techniques on students with disabilities. The credit requirements to earn a high school diploma may be revised to include career and technical education as an option instead of practical arts. A bill titled Holocaust Education authorizes the state to contract with the Florida Holocaust Museum for specified purposes relating to classroom instruction. And finally, a bill would repeal the Florida No-Fault Law, which requires every car owner to maintain personal injury protection coverage. That's some of what's happening next week at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
Governor Ron DeSantis announced today the creation of a direct support organization to help inmates find jobs after they complete their sentences. The organization, called the Florida Foundation for Correctional Excellence, will work with businesses and nonprofit groups to raise money for workforce training and reentry programs. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida remains a place that still permits surgical declawing of cats. Steve Bosquet reports a bill banning the procedure is now working its way through the legislature.
Declawing cats is cruel and unnecessary and should be outlawed in Florida, according to a legislator who has filed a bill to permanently ban the practice. Senator Lauren Book of Plantation is sponsor of Senate Bill 48, which would impose a $1,000 fine on anyone other than a licensed veterinarian who declaws a cat. A vet who does it would be subject to disciplinary action by the State Board of Veterinary Medicine and fines of up to $5,000 per incident.
We've worked really hard to try to educate. I think, you know, when we talk about the inhumane practice of declawing cats, you know, we do have a lot of very important issues that come before our legislature, but our four-legged friends need time, too, and to have their day. And I think that we've worked really hard to have these conversations and to keep people engaged and excited about an issue.
Book guided the bill to passage in the Senate Agriculture Committee. The 30 to 60-minute surgery is formally known as an onychectomy. According to the advocacy group PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, many veterinarians refuse to engage in the practice. Declawing has been outlawed in most European countries, some provinces in Canada, and at least three major American cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Denver. Musician Ozzy Osbourne is featured in a new public service announcement for PETA that criticizes the practice. PETA said declawing involves 10 separate painful amputations. It severs tendons, nerves, and ligaments in all 4 feet. As a child, Book said, her family cat was declawed and no one knew it was a form of mutilation that could be painful.
We had Cinnamon, who was an Abyssinian, and he was declawed, and it was never really anything that we thought about. But we know, you know, as was pointed out in testimony today, that this is and can be life-threatening to cats.
New York was the first state to ban declawing of cats. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the bill into law last year, and it took 5 years for that state to act. The New York law punishes cat owners for declawing, but in Florida, Lauren Book decided to take a different approach.
You do have this really organized, dedicated group of advocates who are the self-described crazy cat ladies and men, and we will stop at nothing. And I've always been so proud of people engaging with their process.
A Senate staff report on the declawing bill cites a New York State Assembly memo in support of the legislation. The memo said declawing can affect how a cat walks and can result in felines suffering arthritis, back and joint pain, and other problems. I'm Steve Bosquet.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Robbie Gaffney, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Steve Bosquet. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2020 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag.